Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Monday, January 2nd. Happy New Year. Welcome back to the Iowa College Basketball Podcast. Got Matt Norlander with me. We got a lot of stuff to get to after a wild weekend of college basketball. Villanova stayed unbeaten and top-ranked with a win at Creighton. Florida State won at Virginia. North Carolina lost at Georgia Tech. Nebraska moved to 2-0 in the Big Ten with a win at Maryland by closing on a 14-0 run. Minnesota won at Purdue. Markelle Fultz and his Washington teammates lost to Washington State. So there were a lot of, like I said, wild results. But I wanted to start with the preseason number one team, and that's the Duke Blue Devils, who got handled fairly easily at Virginia Tech on Saturday. To be clear, this wasn't a massive upset. Like North Carolina losing at Georgia Tech, massive upset. You know, Virginia Tech closed at like a four-point underdog. So there's nothing crazy about Virginia Tech beating Duke in Blacksburg. But still, you know, Buzz's team handled them basically from tip to buzzer. Matt Norlander, you wrote about that game. Of course, it was the first game Duke played without Grayson Allen. What did you make of Duke's performance? And is it the type of thing that makes you change any long-term projections about Coach K's team?
The game was alarming because I did not think this team, with Mike Krzyzewski coaching and this personnel, would look as bad and carefree on defense. It was bizarre. Now, Tech played a good game, and Buzz and his staff scouted well. They were definitely prepared. For Duke to have had more than a week off and to look so unprepared was surprising to me. Even if Grayson was on the floor in that game, I still don't think they're able to beat Tech. See, a lot of it was like Tech was able to – there were so many plays where they just had open looks near the rim. It was bizarre. And Duke's not, you know, they're not, are they an elite team on the interior? Absolutely not right now, because Giles is still coming along. Marquise Bolden is hitting something of a wall here, because he's not getting as many minutes as I thought that maybe he should have, given he should be fully healthy. Jefferson's been very, very good, but he can't just be everything down low. So for Tech to have done what it did in the style it did was impressive. We both picked the Hokies to cover. I was expecting a pretty close game. It really wasn't that. Big picture, GP, I still, you know, I was critical of Duke's defense, but I did say, you know, I still consider this team to have the potential to be the best in the country from a player-by-player talent standpoint. I still think Duke has the most talent of any team in the country. My opinion has not changed on that and probably won't change because what they have is extremely good. But can they be more consistent than this? Now we're gonna start paying attention to what they do in league play here, because it was the league opener on the road against a team that's probably going to be in the NCAA tournament. There's really no reason to believe that Tech won't get there in the first year with Buzz, his third season at the school. But if we see something like this again from Duke, because it is only the team's second loss, and the first one came in the closing seconds to Kansas on a neutral Madison Square Garden. So no reason to have any sort of like huge knee-jerk, okay, Duke's not an elite team. Let's wait on that. But it was alarming to me that Tech did what it wanted to do, and Duke just didn't seem to play with any sort of pride or sense of awareness on defense for a lot of that game.
Yeah, and I think your larger point is accurate. Anytime Duke loses, particularly anytime Duke gets run off the court, you know, people start to ask big questions and draw grand conclusions. You know, I heard some people over the weekend say, Duke's struggling. Duke's won 10 of its last 11 games. You know, like it, and the lone loss was Saturday at Virginia Tech, which, let's be honest, like, how many teams are going to win at Virginia Tech this year? Like maybe none, right? I mean, I think somebody will go in there and win. It's, you know, I don't want to pretend that it's Allen Fieldhouse all of a sudden, but you know, no. I think when we look back on March, there's going to be nothing shameful about losing at Virginia Tech. A lot of good teams are going to lose at Virginia Tech. But the way it happened is concerning. They didn't guard at all. You know, Virginia Tech shot 55% from the field. I mean, like 55% from the field against Duke, against a Duke team with future pros all over the court. Like that shouldn't happen. And Duke is now ranked outside of the top 20 in defensive efficiency, I believe. The issues, though, are you go back and start, you know, thinking about why Duke was the consensus number one team in America and projected to win the national championship. And a lot of it was rooted in they've got preseason national player of the year, Grayson Allen. They've got possible future number one overall pick, Harry Giles. They've got, you know, fellow five-star forward, Marquise Bolden. And you fast forward to January 2nd, and here's what we know. Grayson hasn't been great this year. And right now, he's not even in uniform. Harry Giles doesn't, he can still be one and done, I guess, and somebody will draft him somewhere based on potential and all that, but he's not a good basketball player right now. Me living in Memphis, like, watching him reminds me a little bit of, like, watching Chandler Parsons right now. Like, Chandler has done great things and might do great things, but, you know, coming off of multiple knee surgeries, like, you watch Chandler Parsons play right now, and he doesn't look like he belongs on the court, you know, much. Harry Giles doesn't look like he belongs on the court much. And, I think it's important to know. It's not this that he finished with 4 points. It's that he only played 13 minutes. Like, they don't want him on the court a whole lot right now. Now, some of it is minutes restriction stuff, but some of it is because he's not one of their best players. And then Bolden, like you said, I don't know if he's hit a wall or if he's just caught in a numbers game or if he's just not as good as some people thought, or at least not ready to contribute at the high major level like you would hope. But you start talking about how many first round picks did we think Duke had in the preseason? You know, is it Giles, Tatum, Bolden, Grayson Allen? Like, that's probably the four people would have said, right? In the preseason. Now people will throw Kennard in that conversation, and I think for good reason. But in the preseason, number one team in the country's got four projected first-round draft picks. Who are they? Grayson Allen, Jason Tatum, Harry Giles, Marquise Bolden. Well, Grayson Allen's suspended. Harry Giles is still obviously a work in progress. And Bolden, it's barely playing. So, like, this isn't the Duke team we expected to see. Can they still go do the whole thing? Absolutely. And honestly, if you ask me to pick a national champion right now, I'd probably still pick them. But, their season has already encountered more adversity than I think Coach K or anybody on that staff would have wanted.
It's, I don't know. I won't overreact.
Right.
But the Giles thing, I want to give him one more game just to see how they use him, what he does. He's not showing the kind of player that we know he is. So to me, that's the most interesting aspect of the next game. Grayson almost certainly will not be on the floor, and that is against Georgia Tech, who, of course, took out Carolina. So we'll see. Bolden, I think, has some issues with the defensive concepts. I don't think he is good at switching. I think he has trouble playing in screen and roll games and stuff like that. So we'll see. This could be a blip. You never know. If Duke reels off, seven straight Ws, then it is what it is, and they'll be right there at the forefront of the conversation for best team in America. But to me, GP, the Tech loss was so much worse for Carolina. Like, Duke, I guess in some ways just was more frustrating because you just rarely see a team of K's not play with that sort of energy and focus on defense. But Carolina is so much better. The gap between Carolina and Tech is so much bigger than the gap between Duke and Virginia Tech. So for Georgia Tech to win the way it did, hey, listen, good on Josh Pastner. Right now it's looking like the change of scenery was terrific for him, and this is a team that wasn't expected to be that great, and it's not a great team. It's not even a really good team, no doubt about it. But he is at least already, like you wouldn't want to lose every single game the rest of the season, but like what he's done to this point is already a season's worth of accomplishments for a first-year coach at a spot like that. So good on Pastner for at least getting some momentum like this and landing one of the biggest wins of the season, because I still believe in Carolina as a top-10 team, but that's a weird one. I mean, I don't quite get, and to be totally honest, I was on, watching Duke Virginia Tech. I had to write a column. So I got to that game, that Carolina Tech game, with about 5 minutes to go on a second screen and watch the rest. So I did not see the first 30 minutes of the game or so. So I don't know how they did it, but it's bizarre, man. That's a stain on Carolina's resume.
Well, I was streaming the game. It wasn't even like on actual television, it was on the Watch ESPN app. So I was streaming the game, and as you're watching it, it looks like All right. Early tip on the road, against a team that was picked 14th in the ACC, heading into New Year. Like, just your tip, all the boxes that sometimes gets checked, where you don't come out with intensity. Like, already thinking about, all right, what time are we going to get back to Chapel Hill? You know, what's going on for New Year's Eve? Like, all the stuff that, that young people might run into. Like, I can even remember being a high school baseball player and think, having a game one time against what appeared to be an outmanned opponent. And there was like a big party, like, back at home that night. And it was like, all right, if we can run rule these guys and get this over with in five innings, then like we can get back home by this time. We can get to the party. Like, as I was watching, I was reminded of that moment. We didn't lose the game, but like, sometimes your priorities aren't always what they're supposed to be. And that's what it looked like as you were watching North Carolina, Georgia Tech. Like, they're focused on other things. They didn't take this game seriously. But then they'll just flip a switch and run away. And in fact, Georgia Tech ran away. Georgia Tech ended up winning by double digits, not North Carolina. Like, even with 10 minutes to go, I would have said North Carolina still wins by double digits. And instead, Georgia Tech wins by double digits. And so, you're absolutely right. Like, the Duke loss got all the attention because it was actually on television. Like, people were watching it. I don't know how many people are actually watching North Carolina, Georgia Tech outside of the, North Carolina market and the Atlanta market. Whereas, Duke, Virginia Tech was on every television in every bar in America. So that one got the most attention. But it ain't even close. Like, what was the bigger upset? Like we said, Duke was a 4-point favorite and lost at Virginia Tech. Lost to a team that's probably going to be in the NCAA tournament. North Carolina was an 18-point favorite and lost by 12. That's a 30-point differential. Like, there are places that track this kind of stuff, but you won't see many of those. Somebody that's favored by a 30-point difference in point spread to actual result. And so, yeah, listen, I still think North Carolina can achieve everything that I thought it would achieve, or at least I thought was capable. But that is the type of loss that can cost you a regular season title, because when you play in a league like this, where every other game it feels like is against a ranked opponent or something close to a ranked opponent, you gotta put the ones that you're supposed to get no matter what in your back pocket, and that's a missed opportunity for them. By definition, Carolina's going to finish with one fewer ACC win than it was supposed to, and so that was a troubling result for the Tar Heels. But like you said at the top, good for Josh Pastner. I don't know that any coach who had been mostly successful throughout his career endured as much criticism the past 2 years from his own fan base than Josh did. I mean, like, Tom Crean would be up there. Steve Alford would obviously be up there. But, like, Josh is right there in that conversation. To the point where he took an inferior job just to parachute out of Memphis. And it was great for him. I think probably great for Memphis as well, just because everybody needed a fresh start. But to see him have that moment after so many bad moments over the past couple of years, good for him, because he's a genuinely good man who has really been through it, at least from a professional perspective over the past couple of years. So in that sense, it was nice to see him have that moment.
I agree. And so right now, Parrish, take a snapshot of the ACC standings right now, because this is not going to be how it plays out. But the ACC only has two teams in the 100s or worse in KenPom. They are Georgia Tech and Boston College, both of whom are ahead of the standings against the likes of Virginia, Duke, Carolina. This is how it – Florida State, Clemson, Notre Dame, Miami, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, Boston College, all in the top half of the league, have not lost a league game yet. Virginia is the only team that's won and lost a game. And then the bottom half, Duke, Carolina, Cuse, Louisville, Pittsburgh, even NC State, which I think will be a pretty good team by the season's end, and then Wake Forest. So just funkiness there in the ACC. And I don't know if you want to transition to the Big Ten or not, but the Big Ten looks just weird as hell right now. It was a bizarre, interesting, intriguing weekend for college basketball overall, because we had some very unexpected upsets, even for like Virginia to lose to Florida State the way that it did. It came back. It got, I think it was Kyle Guy that hit the three with, 10 seconds or so to go. They find that, they go on like a 7-0 run. And that's just an instance where 98% of the time, Virginia's going to win that game because they just smother you. And then Dwayne Bacon hits, comes down the floor, hits a tough three from the wing, gets the lead back. Florida State wins. That was baller. I don't know the last time a player put up 26 and a half on Virginia. Teams struggle to score 26 on Virginia and a half. That's not an exaggeration. So it was very bizarre to see UVA, Duke, Carolina all go down. The ACC looks weird, but the Big Ten is also.
Yeah, to your point, you look at the league standings right now, and it's just a snapshot based somewhat on, you know, the way the first week of league play schedules were laid out. First place in the ACC right now is Florida State, followed by Clemson, followed by Notre Dame, followed by Miami, followed by Virginia Tech, followed by Georgia Tech, followed by Boston College. Those are all those schools. Georgia Tech, Boston College, let's just focus on those two. They were picked 14th and 15th in the ACC preseason poll. They are now tied for second in the ACC, ahead of Virginia, ahead of Duke, ahead of North Carolina, ahead of Louisville, and ahead of Syracuse, which, by the way, lost again to Boston College. Like, this is...
And let Boston College put up 96 points.
Like, this is going to end up being one of Jim Boeheim's worst teams. I think by the time we get to March, the ACC standings will look about like we expected them to look, give or take a team here or there. But right now, if you just look at, like, you just look at the standings page and you look at the teams at the top and then look at the teams in the middle and the teams at the bottom, like, it looks backwards. It looks like you're looking at it from the wrong perspective. In the Big Ten, how about this? There are two teams at the top of the standings tied for first. One is a Michigan State team that struggled in the non-league portion of its schedule, but they're 2-0. And the other one's Nebraska, 2-0 in Big Ten play with two road wins at Indiana and then at Maryland yesterday in a game that I was actually watching and was just bizarre because Nebraska jumped on Maryland early, but then Maryland kept hanging around. And then Maryland got a lead and then took it up to like 13 points. And you just assume that the game's over. Like, you know, okay, maybe Maryland covers or doesn't cover, but like there was no way Maryland wasn't going to win the game. And then Nebraska closes on a 14-0 run, wins the game. And so Tim Miles, 2-0 at Nebraska. And then, of course, Minnesota last night gets a win at Purdue. Talking about big upsets, they were, I think, a 14-point underdog, end up winning in overtime. So that was another big differential between point spread and actual result. So Indiana sitting here 0-1 in the Big Ten, Ohio State 0-1 in the Big Ten, but Michigan State 2-0, Nebraska 2-0. So those standings are a little unusual as well.
The Minnesota win, and full disclosure, shout out to my brother Chris who got engaged yesterday morning.
Shout out to Devin Downey.
There we go. Absolutely. Shout out to Chris. Shout out to Devin Downey. Shout out to my sister-in-law to be Lauren. So he pulled a fast one. She was thinking that it was going to happen Christmas, if not that, then surely New Year's Eve. He waited until New Year's Day, got it done. But because of all that, I had an engagement party to go to. So full disclosure, I did not see the Nebraska win and I did not see the Minnesota win. They are both just shocking. Specifically Minnesota, they're off to a terrific start. The win on the road against a really, really impressive Purdue team is it's weird to me. And Caleb Swanigan continues to be good. I'm going to have something on him later this week. He had another 20-20 game. I mean, he is a stat monster. He has been terrific. But right now, the Big Ten, it's just super intriguing. Let's see what happens in the next week and a half, 2 weeks here, because – yeah, Michigan State, you know, just it's really early GP, but just, you know, they're already out to a nice 2-0 start. Wisconsin's 1-0. They got plenty of time to show that they are clearly the best team. We'll see. They've got a very interesting game against Indiana. And now Indiana obviously has some urgency to that game because the Hoosiers have in a hurry gone from what they were 8-1 at one point to now 10-4. They've lost two in a row, including a game in Nebraska. Didn't look great against Louisville on Saturday on a neutral court. So now Indiana's got not a must win, but I would say a must win in terms of if they lose the game, they're not going to win the Big Ten regular season. For as weird as the Big Ten is, I just don't see Indiana getting off to an 0-2 start and being able to recover from that to win the league. So it should be pretty, pretty intriguing over the next 7 to 10 days in this conference, because I think we'll get some more weird results, GP. And I don't know if we'll have any sort of defined tiered system within the conference, because Saturday and Sunday's results really put everything into a jamble.
I want to look ahead before we get out of here, but first, let me tell you about SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long, long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or for that show that you want to attend, and none of the older ticket sites have seemed willing to want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is always the first place I go to buy tickets for games or concerts, and it should be the place that you go as well, because SeatGeek, they do all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites to ensure you get the best possible deal. In other words, they do all the work, you save time and money. And if you use the promo code COLLEGEBB, that's COLLEGEBB, you'll get a $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. So get on that. Download the SeatGeek app, purchase tickets, use the promo code COLLEGEBB, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Again, the promo code is COLLEGEBB. That's SeatGeek, millions of tickets in one place. There aren't a lot of great games this week. By great, I mean, I should probably rephrase. There aren't many games between two ranked schools this week, but we do get a great one on Wednesday night, and it's Villanova at Butler. You would think that if you were Jay Wright, you'd like to, after getting a victory at Creighton over the weekend, which was just impressive on a variety of levels, because you know they took shot after shot from Creighton. You know they're playing in front of 18,000 people on the road. They've got an opportunity to enter the 2017 calendar year undefeated in this season, finish the 2016 calendar year with a 38-3 record. And when they need to make shots, like, you know, Josh Hart's making a shot. You know, Jalen Brunson, you know, went big, outplayed Maurice Watson. You'd like to get a little bit of a breather, and yet, nope, back on the road, this time to Hinkle Fieldhouse, another sold-out arena, another hostile environment, another real challenge. Like, they might be a slight favorite, you know, 1-point favorite, but that's it. I mean, it's a coin flip of a game. And so there aren't many of those ranked team against ranked team matchups this week, but certainly the one we're going to get on Wednesday between Villanova and Butler is one to pay attention to. I can't wait for that one.
Yeah, I'll wrap up with that. So real quick, so Tuesday, just UNC at Clemson, keep an eye on it.
Yep.
We'll almost definitely talk about that on the next podcast, because it is a road game for Carolina coming off the loss. West Virginia at Texas Tech, if Tech wins that one, we'll really start having to pay attention to them, and overall just a look at the Big 12, because West Virginia looks – I mean, it had no issues going into Oklahoma State, you know, a solid OSU team. And then Wisconsin at Indiana is the big game on Tuesday. Just keep an eye on that one because Indiana needs it. But, yeah, Wednesday, without a doubt, Villanova-Butler, Louisville at Notre Dame. Notre Dame wins that. It'll really do really wonders for its resume. Nova, it was good for the Big East. Creighton played well. Might have been a little too small for the moment, those closing moments. Nova just looked like it had better composure. It just looks like the Big East best team, and that's a fine thing.
The point you just made is I think spot on. They are very comfortable in that moment. Like they look very comfortable, and why wouldn't they be? I mean, they were in the biggest moments of last season, like, you know, final minute, you know, national championship on the line, and like that worked out well. And they've been, you know, on the road at Purdue, you know, tight game earlier this season. I don't want to say that Creighton looked uncomfortable in the moment, but like that's what struck me more than anything about the way Villanova closed that. They looked very comfortable in a moment that makes a lot of teams uncomfortable.
Without a doubt. And it's why, and I know we've talked about it here and there on the podcast, but I feel like nationally, the prospect of Villanova winning back-to-back titles hasn't like truly been something that's been out there. I feel if any blue blood school had won last year's title and brought back the same elements to a roster and had, you know, a really, really good coach, it would be a more dominating storyline through the first 6-7 weeks of the season and from, you know, the preseason on. It's been out there, GP, and maybe my perspective is wrong and you disagree, but I don't feel like people are there's just something about it where they're not really totally saying, and maybe it's because obviously there's so many good teams this year at the top, But when you look at Carolina, you know, falling on its face at Tech, Georgia Tech, and Duke, you know, getting run by Virginia Tech, and Kentucky has nights where it can't seem to, you know, hit the ball from beyond the three-point arc. UCLA goes down to an Oregon team. Maybe when you look at all that and you see how Villanova, which has played a legitimate schedule, still isn't faltering, we should just, you know, acknowledge that this is something very much on the table here, and it's hard to do. The tournament is its own beast unto itself, but at this point, Villanova winning another title 2 years in a row is something that's very much a reality, and I think that conversation will pick up, especially if they win at Butler, and as we get to mid-January, I think you'll hear more and more about that. Because, by the way, they're still undefeated. They still have not lost since they played in the final of the Big East Championship game against Seton Hall.
It's been more than 9 months. To your point, like, if Kentucky had won a national championship last year and was undefeated and ranked number one on January 2nd, it would be the dominant storyline in college basketball. Is John Calipari about to go back-to-back? If Duke had won the championship last year and was undefeated and ranked number one on January 2nd, it would be the dominant story in college basketball. Is Coach K going back-to-back? And yet Villanova, with a very real chance to go back-to-back, is not the dominant story in college basketball. You know, it's either, you know, Grayson Allen or you know, for a little while it was UCLA, you know, and Lonzo Ball. But, like, Villanova has never been the dominant story in college basketball this season, even though they probably should. Because, listen, they're not the favorite to win the national championship according to Las Vegas oddsmakers, and I understand why, because there are teams that are obviously and undeniably more talented than them. You know, Duke and Kentucky being, you know, two. Perhaps there's more, but we know there's two. But I will say this, like, Villanova wasn't the most talented team in the country last year either, and they got it done. And so I don't know if a bracket came out today that I'd pick them, but they'd have to be one of the teams you seriously consider, because, you know, they've won at Purdue. They've won at Creighton. They've beaten everybody else. And, you know, Duke has lost a game worse than a game at Creighton. You know, Kentucky has lost a game worse than, you know, a win at Purdue, a game at Purdue. My point being, Villanova has done things that basically every other team in the country, outside of Baylor, I guess, has shown themselves unable to do. And so that's worth something. I don't know that it should make us reevaluate exactly what we think is possible long term, but absolutely, if you're putting together a short list of teams that are capable of winning the 2017 national championship, Villanova has to be on that list. Whether you had them there in the beginning, I think it's irrelevant now, because this is clearly a high-level college basketball team led by Josh Hart, who is probably going to be, or at least he's on track to be, I should say, Villanova's first ever National Player of the Year. Remember, you can subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast on iTunes. That's the best way to get the latest episodes as quickly as possible. So please do that. Thank you all for listening. Again, Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you again on Wednesday. Till then, take care.